Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast. I am your host, writer-director Christopher R. Mim, and I have to ask, are you there? Are you listening? Are you interested in what it is I have to say? Are you thinking about the holiday season as it comes? Are you excited for Halloween? Have you seen Annihilate All Humans yet? Have you contributed to my new movie, The Wad? Are you okay? Are you happy? Are you feeling secure in your life and who you are? Are you connected to the universe? I'm sitting in a car recording this podcast because it's been crazy. It's October now. Normally, I always try to get my stuff out no later than the 5th of any one month. That's my goal. Try at least to get my newsletter and podcast out by the 5th. It is October 4th, which means I have to get this thing done and out to you guys by like tonight. And it's been crazy these last few weeks. We had the big Mimathon, movie marathon in Oshkosh this past weekend, which was amazing. Thank you to everyone who came out and joined us to watch movies and celebrate the films of the Mimiverse and all the fine people who are involved with the making of these movies who came out, like Jim Deergod No Norgard was there. A lot of members of my family were there. Christy Williams, who played Mrs. Davis in Queen of Snakes, showed up. Bob and Rob from The Giant Spider and The Beast Walks Among Us, the preacher and the End Is Nigh guy, they showed up. Tyler Haynes showed up. I almost forgot Tyler. He doesn't listen to this, though, so he wouldn't have known. Watch now, he's going to call me up and be like, screw you, you son of a bitch, I do listen, and you almost forgot me. So it was cool. A lot of great people showed up. Probably a dozen folks actually watched every single movie. It was really cool. That theater is great. I love showing my movies there. We do it every year, and this is the first time in a long time we've done like a marathon like this. It was really fun to watch all my movies like that. And I purposely selected ones that work together and play into each other. And I also picked ones that haven't gotten as much attention, some of which were more because of like COVID. We showed The Phantom Like Kids and The Unseen Invasion, which really hasn't screened much because it was the COVID movie. It was the quarantine movie we made, so it didn't have like a live premiere, and I've only shown it a few times, so that was fun to see that in a theater. Same with Queen of Snakes. That came out in 2019, and it didn't get as many screenings as it normally would have. It got kind of messed up, and with COVID and all that, it's like there should have been some overlap there, and it didn't really work out. And I think that's one of those movies that doesn't get as much love as I think it deserves. I think it's an underrated gem. And I think, if anything, the movies I selected for this Mimathon, which the climax of was the Wisconsin premiere of Annihilate All Humans, the ones I selected, aside from Annihilate All Humans, were ones I feel like are underrated, don't get enough love, and haven't screened enough. I put Terror from Beneath the Earth. I think Terror from Beneath the Earth is a great movie. I've always been very proud of that one. It's my most authentic, I feel, to those old movies. Any chance I get to show it, I show it. And then we showed The Giant Spider, of course, because if you're going to do a Mimathon, you got to throw The Giant Spider in there. And then it was Queen of Snakes, because, again, I feel like it hasn't gotten enough love. The Unseen Invasion, which it hasn't shown just enough because of COVID. And then it was Demon with the Atomic Brain, which, weirdly, I feel like is one of my better films. I don't think it's gotten enough love. I repeatedly hear from people who will say that's their favorite. A lot of people like it, but it's sort of a weird outlier with a lot of the other ones because it was all new people, different actors, it was different characters, it was a bit of a stretch into some newer, weirder stuff. And I just sometimes think it gets ignored or forgotten. It's a weird one in the pantheon. I wanted to show that, but also a lot of stuff in Demon with the Atomic Brain plays into Annihilate All Humans. So it kind of made sense to be like, we're going to show this so that when they start talking about the demon computer and the portal technology and all this stuff, this is what they're talking about. It also plays into the events of the Wall People, but not quite as much. And I wasn't going to show the late night double feature, partially because one of the things I also did when selecting these movies was trying to pick the ones that were the shorter ones. I mean, they're all roughly 65 to 75 minutes, but the late night double feature being two movies is actually 90 minutes long. so it's a little too long. Of those ones I showed, Demon is the longest at 75 minutes. Anyway, so that went really well. However, it went all day on Saturday, and when it was over, I had to drive back to Minnesota, which is a 4.5-hour drive, because I had to get back in time for my kids to do their sports stuff, curling and baseball. Then I went to a concert with my mom. We went and saw Ringo, which was awesome. I've seen Ringo before, but he's a really fun show, Ringo and his all-star band. It's great. The next day, we were filming with Mike Cook and my son Elliot outside by our stand-in for Phantom Lake, Carver Lake, and that was like 7 hours. And then I went to another concert. I don't know how or why I ended up with concert tickets for like multiple days in a row, but I did. So Mitch Gonzalez, you guys know Mitch, and I went and saw Nick Cave. He was doing a solo tour, which was really great. So that was Monday night. And then last night, the wife and I went and saw Peter Gabriel and Mark the General Hader and Cherie Ruby Gallinati, who you guys know, were there as well. It's been a whirlwind of crazy, and I'm trying to work at the same time and get my kids everywhere they need to be. And here it is, the afternoon of October 4th. I want to get my podcast out to you by tomorrow, and I'm just now recording it in the parking lot of the curling club where my daughter Alice is now practicing. Well, I guess I should update you on that. Last month we were talking about my daughter Alice was trying to make it to the 2024 Youth Olympic Games in the sport of curling. Sadly, her team didn't make it, and it literally came down to a single rock in the round robin play. It was 23 teams broken up into four groups. The top two of each group would go on to the quarterfinals and then the semis and then the finals. They got knocked out from getting into the quarterfinals by a single frickin' rock. Of all the teams that were there, they were a bit of an underdog, admittedly. There were a handful of teams that were the favorites. One was made up of like national champions and state champions. I mean, they were the teams to beat. Alice's team was a bunch of misfits and underdogs, and she comes in there and she starts making every single team have to work their butts off to get there. One of the teams they played, like the teams previously they played, they destroyed them. We're talking like 10-0, 13-0, which in curling, that's ridiculous. They were just wiping the ice or wiping the floor with them. And then they go up against Alice, and suddenly they're having to fight for everything, like really fight for everything, to the point that at halftime, I was eavesdropping on the coach of that team that was like, what are you guys doing? Why are these guys giving you such a run for your money? Why aren't you being more aggressive? And the team's like, we can't. We try, but they keep fighting us. It's like the other teams, they just walked all over, and suddenly Alice is like, not in my house. But it ultimately came down to one game. They consistently would keep it super close, and it would go into overtime, which very few games did, but Alice kept doing that. Like, these teams just to have to fight to the bitter end. The one game, it went into overtime, and it came down to the last rock. Alice had to throw something. If she would have thrown something a centimeter to the right, and I'm not kidding, they would have won. However, it over-curled, it over-swung, and it hit something and then rolled too far. And then the other guy had to just throw it in, and he came up a little too fast, and it came down to a matter of inches. It stopped, but just barely. So Alice had an opportunity, and it didn't quite work, and then all he had to do was throw it, and he almost messed it up, and they would have gone on to the quarterfinals, but it came down to that one little moment. And that's curling. That's how it works. It's like these nail-biter moments. And so they didn't quite make it, but they had a great time doing it. And in the process, Alice was able to acquire a competitive girls team that she's now leading, and that's why she's practicing. She's a beast when it comes to this stuff. So she's practicing now because they're going to go to the state competition and try to take that. And if they take that, they get to go to nationals. If they take that, they get to go to worlds. So she's not giving up. If anything, this just energized her love for this damn thing more. I like playing it, but I've actually stepped back from playing it because there's so much curling going on now. I've lost my taste for it to a certain extent. I love watching my kids play it, but I can't also play it at the same time because it's just too much. Plus, I have a lot of stuff going on. I'm making this movie, The Wad, which, hey, you should contribute to that and get your name in the end credits. Do it. I mean, it's like $20. You get your name in the end credits. And you can pre-order DVDs and Blu-rays. We're filming it. I'm keeping busy. There's like a handful of scenes I have yet to get done that I have to film before it gets too cold because it's some stuff that's outside. Then there's some, I mean, this is a, it's a mockumentary, faux documentary thing. So there's a lot of sit-down interviews that I can do inside once it's cold, and that's fine, but I have to get this outdoor stuff done. And that scene I shot with Mike Cook a couple days ago, that was a big get. That was the biggest one. Now there's one more that I'm going to be doing in a couple days here, so I'm on track to get everything done that I need to get done. But there's a lot that still has to be done. Everything I've gotten and everything I've been able to edit is turning out really good in ways that I think this might be one of my most unique, best films yet. To the point that I may even go a little more of a traditional route in releasing it. I may actually try and hit up some big film festivals. Because it's a mockumentary and because it's supposed to be the 70s looking back on the 50s, still from a 50s lens, but the 70s looking back on the 50s, I'm doing some unique stuff where it's like old footage, so old TV footage or Super 8 footage or whatever. So there's parts of that that I'm filming in black and white and 4:3 old TV aspect ratio. But then the modern stuff, the interviews, are purposely being shot in color, which is the first time I've purposely shot a movie in color, which I'll explain in a second, because you're like, hey, Queen of Snakes was in color. I'll explain in a second. So those sequences of interviews and stuff in the future are all shot in color on purpose and in widescreen. So I'm pushing the envelope of anything I've ever tried, and everything I've been able to shoot and edit, I freaking love. I don't know if this movie's going to be controversial in the old Mimiverse as far as like just being so different, but it's really reinvigorated my love of making movies. And that's something I needed. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and it's sometimes you just need a little variety. Variety is the spice of life. That's what they say. So quickly, what I mean by purposely shooting in color, obviously it's a little self-explanatory. I'm purposely shooting this movie in color in certain sections. But when I did Queen of Snakes, I didn't originally intend to release it in color. I was going to just do it in black and white like I'd always done. However, Stephanie, who is the main character but also the costume designer, had chosen costumes for all the actors and herself in such a way that it actually worked in color. Sometimes when you know you're shooting in black and white, you can have things that don't match but will look fine in black and white, so you don't have to always think about stuff like that. When you're shooting in color, though, you have to think about the color palette. You have to worry about how things are composed visually. Something about while I was editing Queen of Snakes that I realized, I was like, everything about what we chose for locations and outfits and everything looked so good in color. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I can fake this to look like sort of a fake Technicolor. I wanted to oversaturate things, undersaturate other things, make people look kind of pink and not natural skin tones. And it worked. I made an executive decision, I don't know, halfway through the process, that, you know what, I'm going to release this movie in color. So the stuff I'd edited previously, I went back to and adjusted and made work. And I'm really proud of how that turned out. And at that time, it was movie 14, I think. And I was like, I have never released anything in color. Demon with the Atomic Brain has like weird washed out hints of color, but not true color. And also you have the blood in Where Skeeto Nazi Hunter showing up red. So there were little elements of color, but never a movie fully in color. So I was like, screw it, man. 14 movies in, I'm going to make a color movie. It's not going to be my MO going forward. And of course, I went right back to the black and white because I love black and white, but I was feeling it. And I thought it just looked good. So I thought, screw it, let's do it. And I did. But this one in particular, because it's a documentary, I'm shooting it in color except for the old footage. And I figured that too would help differentiate the stuff in the present, quote unquote, of the 70s and the TV footage and old Super 8 footage and all that stuff from the 50s. You end up with a different aspect ratio, but also it's all in black and white. So far, it's just turned out really good, and it's funny. I wrote it to be a bit absurdist. I'm a big fan of the Christopher Guest mockumentaries, like Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show, Spinal Tap being the mother of them all. I don't know why, I just thought it'd be a fun idea, but it was one of those things like Where Skeeto Nazi Hunter, right? That it's this angle to a story or a particular trope like a blob, right? The blob is very specific, but I feel like the story of the blob can only really be told one way. If I were to make the wad like the blob, it wouldn't be particularly different than the blob. By doing this as a faux documentary, it's its own thing. It's its own animal. And I'm really proud of it. It's just unique. Again, I'm really trying new stuff, and it's been really fun to do. So I'm working on that and just keeping busy. Got a bunch of screenings coming up here, pretty much all in Wisconsin, for the month of October. So there's opportunities to see the movies. Check out the website, saineuphoria.com. There's a calendar on there to see where I'm screening stuff. But a lot is going on. In sort of sad news this month, because I am so far behind the eight ball and I need to get this stuff done, this month there will be no oral history of the Mimiverse. I know there's some of you like, oh man, that's the only reason I listen. Well, I don't have the time to get it done. I got all these shoot dates coming up. I got to get this thing done and out to you. So I just wanted to at least talk to you guys and let you know that things are going well and I've been busy and I'm having a good time and I can't wait for you to see some of this stuff. I've been posting a lot of behind the scenes photos, which I don't generally do before a movie comes out, but I'm doing it this time on purpose because some of the stuff is like interviews. There's not a lot of action shots or whatever, so I'm trying to show folks what goes into shooting something like a sit-down interview, or like last month in the Mimiverse Monthly newsletter, it was like a picture of Shannon McDonough to show you, hey, Shannon McDonough's in this movie. So I've been posting pictures of behind-the-scenes stuff to get people excited about actors and characters that show up in this movie, and I think it's cool. I don't know, it's invigorating, it's relighting that fire, which hasn't exactly been dead, but sometimes you just need something to sort of ratchet up the excitement. You need something to remind you why you do what it is you do. It's like if you're a teacher and suddenly a kid who's grown up that you had 15 years ago, you see them and they're like, oh man, you're my favorite teacher. You inspired me to do this thing. It reinvigorates you and helps you realize that the things you do matter, or that you do this for a reason. You have a love for it. And sometimes you need to be reminded. Making this movie is reminding me why I love making movies. Because it's a challenge, and it's a unique challenge. I'm not saying I've gotten complacent or anything, but it's like I've made so many movies of a certain type that you get not used to it, but you get sort of good at it, right? And it becomes a little more effortless. And not that something being effortless is boring, but it's not quite as exciting as having to figure out a new problem or work out a new solution. Sometimes it's just kind of cool to see something with new eyes, almost, to like really be presented with something and be forced almost to do things differently, to have to approach a new problem in a novel way using your skill set that you've honed over many years. So I'm very excited by this. And of course, there's that god dang word excited again. You know I say it all the time. But I am. It's just, this is going to be cool. And I don't know if you're going to love it or hate it, but I love everything that's coming out of it so far. So strap in. It's going to be interesting. And I don't mean that in a Midwestern, like, oh, that's interesting or that's different, which is sounds like you're being nice, but it's actually kind of an insult. I mean, it's going to be really, I'm very much interested in finding out how this plays, not only with folks who have been fans of my movies for a long time, but new people. And that's the thing I want to do, is because it's in color, because it's, I think, going to be a little more accessible than my other stuff, because it's a mockumentary, and I think people might understand that a little more than, what is this bat monster movie? I don't get this. You know what I mean? It's going to be a little more mainstream, I guess, that I think that I could maybe hit some film festivals. Maybe I could get some new fans who might then give my other movies a little love. And maybe I get some new fans. Of which, I should say, this past weekend, there were three guys who showed up to the Mimathon just because they heard about my movies from all the years we'd shown there before, and they liked cheesy movies, and they just wanted to check it out. So they came in and they watched two or three of them and ended up staying through the entire day and buying full sets of movies because they're like, these movies are awesome. I need to see them all. It was funny. One guy was a bit of a hard sell, and I gave him a little, like, I'll throw in a few things. And he's like, all right, fine, sold. Because he really did want to get them all. The $100 price point for a full set is substantial, but it's like 19 DVDs, for Christ's sake. It's a pretty good deal. And so he was like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, I'll throw in some of this. I'll throw in a poster. And he was just like, fine, okay. And his buddy was with him, and he's like, yes. It's like, yeah, you're saying that. You're not the one throwing $100 around. But it was really cool that we got some new fans. There was some old fans there that we see all the time. I saw some family members that I haven't talked to in like decades. One of my cousins showed up out of nowhere. I had no idea she lived in the area. She's originally from up north Minnesota, and now she's over in Wisconsin. I had no idea. So that was really cool. It was a great event. I'm really glad I did it. Part of me thinks that it'd be cool to do like a movie marathon a year. Even locally here where we rent out a theater or something and hang out and watch cheesy movies the whole time. I mean, it might be kind of fun. I should see what it would cost to do it. It didn't cost anything for the Time Community Theater in Oshkosh, but they're a nonprofit. Their whole point is to give the area entertainment, and then people can buy beer, and it's Wisconsin, so of course you can buy beer and snacks and watch movies, and it was free, and it was super cool. And people were generous, and they bought a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff. And you may not know this, but, you know, we have the little Pocket Steve stuffed monsters that my wife makes. For every premiere, we always try to do something for the premiere. And this year it was, we had the aliens from Annihilate All Humans. She made little stuffed animal versions of those, and we had a bunch. And usually we sell them out at the premiere, and this year we didn't, which was a little weird. And so we had a handful of them left, so we took them to Oshkosh and sold a bunch there too. So they're kind of exclusives. You can't get them online yet. And maybe at some point you will, but if you go to these events, you can pick them up. It was just so cool. And so, yeah, stuff is going on. I'm staying very, very busy. Like I said, I'm behind the eight ball, and that's why there's no oral history this month. But I promise next month it will be back. I was going to talk about Demon with the Atomic Brain, but I just don't have the time to record it and edit it and get it to you. I'm sorry for that. Tune in next month. For now, I think I'll wrap it up. If you want to contribute to the WAD, I really would appreciate it. It goes a long way to keep us in business. If you like my movies and you want to see more, this is the way to make sure I can. Go to SaintEuphoria.com and contribute. In the meantime, I was able to record another episode of Atomic Tales. So that's coming up, well, right now. Enjoy.
Stephen D. Sullivan and Saint Euphoria present
Atomic Tales,
stories of science, mystery, and excitement. This episode features the latest installment in our fantastic original series, Strange Invaders. Tonight, Agents 1, 5, and 6 get sucked into deep trouble under the Nevada desert as they volunteer for Assignment Spider Squadron. Join us now as we present another in our continuing series of
Atomic Tales.
Agent 5 leaned up against the rough dirt wall and clutched his side. Blood leaked out between his fingers as dry yellow dust fell from the ant tunnel ceiling.
Cut me right under the flak jacket. 6 years as a war sniper without a scratch. And now, this.
Roughhouse Rick Donlevy, Agent 6, gave a whistle showing both concern and admiration.
Part of the job, Deadeye. We'll all compare scars after we get out of this fix. Right, Ray?
First drink's on me, I replied. I fired another burst from my grease gun, and the giant black ant barreling down on us crumpled. The tunnel shook as it fell, and more ochre dust drifted down from the ceiling. The acrid stench as the bug disintegrated momentarily overpowered the earthy reek of the nest. Roughhouse adjusted his helmet and pressed his back against the wall next to Deadeye.
Just like that ant nest in Utah that we raided with the doc. Hey, Agent One. No sweat.
He sounded confident, but mopped heavy beads of perspiration from his brow. Just like Utah, I lied. I doubt anyone still alive believed it. I wished we'd never volunteered to bolster Unit Wolf Red 3, even though my cousin, Corporal Patrick Pat Arness, was in the platoon we were backing up. Who'd have guessed that things would go so badly wrong? Spider Squadron, a new arm of the U.S. Science Bureau, had been created because the U.S. needed a full-time force dedicated to battling the weird menaces threatening our nation. We dubbed them Spider Squadron because spiders catch and kill bugs. Logical, right? The USSB recruited crack troops from all branches of the military to fill the squadron's ranks, under the oversight of Bureau Liaison General Edward Brick Brock, Commanding Officer Colonel Jefferson Smith, and of course, the Terragons. Since the force was still young, when soldiers got sick or wounded, they needed fill-ins.
"Thanks for signing up for this assignment,"
Lieutenant Anthony Ames, AA Cable, said to me, 5 and 6, as we hiked deeper into the giant ant nest beneath the foothills north of Antelope Peak, Nevada. Our sub-commander, Sergeant Hulka, and the other 3 men in our unit marched along behind us, lugging equipment boxes plus weapons and ammo to resupply other units. "We were in the area," I replied. 5 sneered.
"Another damn snipe hunt,"
I chuckled. "About half the time, the USSB is tracking down and battling preternatural menaces. The other half we spend chasing rumors and unreliable witnesses." When my cousin said you boys were short-handed, Deadeye Roughhouse and I figured we could fill in. Cable nodded.
"I've heard you guys like blasting bugs, but this should be light duty. Wolf Red, Unit 3, is mostly support and mopping up. Units 1 and 2 will be seeing the heavy action. I'll join them in the frontline tunnels after I get you situated."
"Why don't you just gas this whole works?"
Roughhouse wondered.
"We tried, but the nest goes in horizontal. Gas wasn't effective. If we blew it up, the ants would just tunnel out someplace new. Our surface units are having a hell of a time blocking off the exits we know about. Best way to deal with these so-and-sos is to dive in and take them out mano a mano."
"Meaning we all drew the short end of the stick,"
Roughhouse observed. Cable laughed.
"We volunteered, actually. Just like you grunts and huntsmen, Green. Too quiet around the barracks lately."
"Careful what you wish for."
Deadeye squinted and checked his squadron gear. 6 and I did the same. Spider troops carried M3 submachine guns, pistols, and other standard military equipment. Every squad sported at least one bazooka, and Unit 1 boasted flamethrowers as well. We all wore flak jackets and helmets equipped with headlamps, and a special Terragon-invented two-way radio that maintained communications in all but the deepest tunnels. It was a lot more gear than Bureau agents carry, but 5-6 and I had been in the services, so nobody complained. Good gear can save your life. The ant tunnel, which was almost big enough to drive an army deuce and a half truck through, branched, and Cable called a halt to check a crudely drawn map. "Right?" I guessed. The lieutenant shook his head.
"That's a dead end. Let will take us to the action. Okay, let's hump it. Red 1 and 2 aren't going to wait all day for resupply."
We pushed it deeper into the dark shadows under the mountain, lamps and eyes trained ahead, wary. That's how the ants caught us from behind. Private Baker went down with only a muffled scream, and Jones died too, despite a short burst from his M3. Sergeant Hulka blasted the brute that killed his buddies in the face, but the one behind it knocked Hulka against the side of the tunnel and rushed the rest of us. Cable stormed back past me, firing his M3.
"Damn things must have opened that dead end."
Roughhouse and I brought our weapons to bear as Cable and Deadeye took down the charging ant, but behind it came another, and even more closed in on the injured Hulka and the rear of our group. O'Brien and Sanchez fired furiously into the mass of giant insects as Hulka managed to break open a crate of grenades. The wounded sergeant hurled one into the oncoming swarm. The blast slowed the bugs down and gave the rest of us enough time to kill the one battling Cable and Agent 5, but not before the monster fastened its huge pincers around Deadeye. It would have cut our sniper in half if not for his flak jacket. O'Brien abandoned his M3, grabbed another grenade, and pulled the pin. Before he could toss it, a giant ant skewered him. The private's hand jerked open, and the grenade fell into the box containing the rest. "Hit the deck!" I yelled. As we did, the whole box went up. The tunnel became fire and smoke, chunks of fragmented sandstone and bone-rattling concussion. Everything went black. For a long moment, the only sounds were men coughing and clots of dusty debris clattering down from the ceiling. When my brain stopped pounding, my headlamp showed a world made of gritty yellow fog. Sound off, I called. Who's alive? Agent 6 coughed.
Me.
Barely.
Agent 5 added. From the others, we only got moans, though it turned out, by some miracle, Sanchez had sustained only minor injuries. Cable was in bad shape, though, unconscious and cut nearly to pieces. The rest lay dead. The blast had sealed the tunnel behind us, so we needed to go deeper into the nest to hook up with Wolf Red Units 1 or 2. We trudged in that direction, but the ants soon found us again. Fortunately, the monster I'd just killed must have been a scout. If more had arrived on its heels, Roughhouse, Deadeye, Sanchez, and I would have been toast with Lieutenant Cable, the strawberry jam, spread on top. This is Agent Ray of Wolf Red 3, I called into my headset. We got ambushed and cut off from the surface. Wolf 1, Wolf 2, please respond. Maybe our gear got damaged in the tunnel collapse, because if anyone responded, we didn't hear them.
Cable might make it, if we can get him to a medic,
Roughhouse observed. I dug the lieutenant's tattered map out of his vest pocket. Like Deadeye, the flak jacket had probably saved Cable's life. I'll take point, I commanded. Rick, help Sanchez with Cable. Roughhouse nodded.
Check.
Deadeye, do the best you can. His chuckle turned into a cough.
Always.
We moved as fast as possible, but soon the sound we dreaded echoed all around us. The hunting trill of more giant ants. Swearing like sailors, we formed a line in front of Cable's stretcher. Deadeye leaned against the tunnel wall for support. Sanchez heaved a flare down the passage, and when the bugs came in sight, we opened up with everything we had. Deafening gunfire filled the tunnel. The air stank of gunpowder, dirt, and mutant insect guts. But the ants kept coming.
I'm out,
Roughhouse announced, dropping an empty clip to the ground. And within moments, the rest of us ran dry, too. Only a few ants remained at that point, but it hardly mattered. Even one of the marauders would make short work of us.
Been nice knowing you,
Deadeye intoned grimly. Roughhouse nodded.
Ray, in the next life, I hope you have fewer cousins.
Just then, a gout of flame flared behind the oncoming bugs. The giant insects screeched and wheeled to face the new threat. But in seconds, our rescuers' flamethrowers turned all the remaining mutants into a 4th of July bonfire. As the enemy died, their charred remains disintegrated into a foul-smelling haze. Wolf Red, Unit 1, with Corporal Patrick Arness in the lead, emerged through the greasy, lingering smoke.
How are you doing, cousin?
Pat asked. I might need a new pair of pants, I admitted, but I've never been happier to see you.
I take back what I said about cousins,
Roughhouse added. Pat laughed.
Funny thing, you coming to help me and me rescuing you instead.
Some of us still need rescuing.
Deadeye grunted and clutched his side. My cousin nodded.
Crane, Young, get these men to Dr. Weldon ASAP.
The two privates grabbed Cable's stretcher and helped Deadeye limp deeper into the nest.
Nikki Weldon's a great doctor,
Pat assured us.
She'll fix him up in no time.
I took a deep breath. That's good news.
And I got better news for you,
Pat continued.
Word from HQ is they've located the lab that makes the bugs. Hitting it is our next job.
I smiled and wiped the grit from my face. Just in time for Christmas.
This has been an original story of Strange Invaders, part of our ongoing series of
Atomic Tales,
brought to you by St. Euphoria Productions. Tonight's episode, Assignment Spider Squadron, was written by Stephen D. Sullivan. It was produced, edited, and read by Christopher R. Mim, who also plays Agent 1, Ray Tyler, and Ray's cousin, Corporal Patrick Pat Arness, and featured Steve Sullivan as Agent 5, Nelson Deadeye Corrigan, Christopher Young as Agent 6, Roughhouse Rick Donlevy, and Elliot Mim as Lieutenant A.A. Cable. Be sure to tune in next month for more Atomic Tales. Please support the films of Christopher R. Mim at SaintEuphoria.com and the work of Stephen D. Sullivan via his Patreon at PaySteve.com. Join the conversation at the Monster Conservancy at SaveMonsters.com. All elements of this episode are copyright 2023 by their creators and may not be reproduced or reused without permission. Atomic Tales and Strange Invaders are trademarks of Stephen D. Sullivan, all rights reserved. This is the St. Euphoria Audiocast Network.
Okay, so that'll do it for this month's edition of the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast. I apologize for not getting this together sooner, but just be satisfied knowing that the only reason I wasn't able to get it done this month is because I'm working hard to bring you more quality Mimiverse entertainment. So I hope you forgive me and tune in next month as we continue the oral history. In the meantime, as I always say, be good. But if you can't do that, be good at it. Make sure to contribute to the WAD at SaintEuphoria.com and have a good month. Have a good Halloween. And I'll talk to you again soon.